Hi friends, it's Brittany. Before we dive into today's episode, I have a quick ask for you. I need your help. I'm doing a short listener survey to get to know you a little bit better. Who's tuning in? What do you love? And how I can keep Conscious Pathways fresh, meaningful, and aligned with what you need. It won't take more than 5 minutes, and your feedback means so much to me. It helps me grow and helps this podcast to grow with you. You'll find the link in the show notes, and I would be so grateful if you took a moment to share your thoughts. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. And now let's get into the episode. Hi, welcome to Conscious Pathways, the podcast where we explore the intersection of education and social justice through transformative conversations. I am your host, Brittany, and I am so very happy that you are tuning in for yet another episode. Today, I am joined by Dr. Charlos Thompson. He is a mental health therapist with over 20 years of experience working with children, families, coping with behavioral challenges, academic achievement, learning disabilities, and drugs and alcohol. He provides trainings for professionals in the youth service industry using best practice standards as recommended by national boards and certification programs. He continues his practice in underserved communities. In addition, Dr. Thompson owns and operates a nonprofit called Prepared by 18 that prepares low-income, first-generation students of color for entering into college and graduating college. This truly was a wonderful conversation with Dr. Thompson. We really talked about that adolescent stage, you know, middle school, high school. We talked a little bit about elementary school, but really preparing young people for those big transitions that happen in life, and especially our low-income and first-generation students for what happens after we graduate high school. I'm so excited to share this conversation, so let's hop into it. Hello and welcome to Conscious Pathways. Today I am joined by Dr. Thompson.
Hello, Brittany.
Hi, thank you so much for joining me. So excited to speak with you.
Absolutely. I'm excited about it. Love to talk about what I love to do.
Yes, same. I feel like I could talk about education, social justice, video games. I could talk about that stuff kind of all day. So yeah, I'm really excited to have you on. I know you just relocated to the East Coast from the West Coast. So how is the East Coast treating you?
Cold. I'm adjusting. It's a big difference between San Diego and DC area. Big difference as far as climate is concerned. So I'm getting used to it. You know, it's a bit of, I've moved a few times in my life, and I've learned that it takes a bit of a, you know, you do have to get used to, you know, new cultures and the way things are ran and how things operate and all those good things. So I'm getting there. It's taken a bit of a adjustment, but I'm there, getting there.
Yes, yes. As someone who has also moved many a times in my childhood, in my adult life, it is definitely an adjustment, and you are just a powerful human for moving in the dead of winter to the East Coast. Yeah,
that's a good way of putting it. Absolutely. I think that's what it was. It was coming here in the wintertime. I think if I came here in the spring, when everybody says the cherry blossoms and the springtime is just a great place to be, it probably would have been a whole different level of adjustment. But because I did come in the winter. As a matter of fact, the second day I was here, it snowed. So it was like 2 inches of snow outside. So I was like, oh my goodness. I'm glad to be here. I'm adjusting. Mm-hmm. My family is glad that I moved back this side of the country. So,
Yes. There's a lot of great, beautiful things about the East Coast, especially that kind of DMV area. There's a lot of beautiful festivals and music festivals, and especially, you know, when spring and summer comes out, it's really nice. Summer gets kind of humid, but for the most part, fall is gorgeous. So,
and I heard the mosquitoes are pretty vicious around here. So
the mosquitoes, like, Yeah. So it's not like summertime here in California where it's mostly just kind of dry. And we have some bugs here and there, depending on where you live in California. It's a very diverse area. But our summers are other than the extreme heat, tend to be pretty much like fine. Just got to not deal with the extreme heat too much. But then you go to the East Coast and then you have humidity. You have bugs. It's a whole other ball field.
And there's the adjustment I'm talking about, right? You have to learn those different climate and cultures and all those other things, those factors that play a part. So there you go.
There you go. You got it. But it is beautiful. And I know you have experience on the East Coast already, but it's a beautiful area. The people are just amazing. It's very diverse. The food is great. So I know once you get out of the being in the dead of winter feeling, you'll have so much fun in so many things.
Yeah.
But can you share a little bit more about yourself and your background, and especially how you kind of joined education and what was your inspiration to join that field of education?
Yeah. So my background's pretty simple. And probably the best way to describe it is growing up as a high school kid, my grandmother put us in this program called Upward Bound. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. San Diego State has an Upward Bound. It's all over the country. But she insisted from grade 9 through 12, we all were going to be put in Upward Bound, do Upward Bound. And, you know, it seems like an extra chore to do something over the summer, right? But it really opened up a lot of doors for my interest in education and all sorts of other experiences. And so from 9 through 12, we were in Upward Bound. We went, Upward Bound's it's a summer program. You go on campus and you live like a college student for 6 weeks. And you pretty much get the whole experience of being in college without having to pay the tuition. And so, as a matter of fact, Upward Bound paid us money to actually be a part of Upward Bound, which is pretty interesting.
Really?
Yeah. They give stipends once a month. And and then throughout the year, we would go on campus once a month and enjoy the college experience. Whatever was going on that weekend, we were part of that. And so obviously, that really led to me really fascinated about developing my education as I got into higher grade levels and eventually going off to college. And so once I went through college, got into college, I realized the challenges of being a minority and on an all white campus. It was the university I went to was all white. It was probably 4% of us were minority students, people of color. And the challenges were vast. And I struggled. My first year, I was put on probation because I just couldn't keep up. I didn't know how to live properly in a dorm, right? Because I didn't have a lot of money, right? And grades, getting to class on time, getting assignments done, all those things were just huge challenges. And then I came from a high school that wasn't the best high school. It was mediocre. So it really didn't prepare me for college. And so when I got there, that first year was disastrous. And I really wanted to just exit and drop out. And to add to that factor was my mom, she was a missionary. So my first year of college, Brittany, she went to Africa to live there for the rest of her life. And I was on my own. My siblings, they all lived out of state. And it was a really big challenge that first year. And I don't know really, I don't know how I made it. I guess it was a godsend that got me through that first year. And so anyway, that led to me really thinking about how to survive as a student of color. And so fortunately, what I aligned with was a program within the university It was a scholarship program, and they really helped me to start getting more disciplined about my my classroom responsibilities, my work, and all that stuff within the classroom, and learning how to live the campus life. And so that led to just me getting, my sophomore year, I started to excel. And my GPA went up. And it really made a big difference. And so to this day, that's kind of what I'm trying to duplicate with my own program, which we'll talk about later if we get to it. And that is that extra support system that particularly kids of low income, first generation, minority students, students of color, and how much of a difference that makes in the success of those students. And so anyway, that's kind of how I got into that, my education, my passion for it.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And I mean, it's unfortunate that you had to go through that struggle of that first year and not really having the supports and really struggling, right? Because I know you mentioned you did the Upward Bound and you kind of got a little bit of that experience of college life, but you know, obviously nothing compares to really doing it and really being in the thick of it. And especially at the age that a lot of people, you know, enter into college for the first time, they're usually around what, 18, 17, 18, maybe 19, mm-hmm. right? You're fresh out of high school. And there's a lot of change and transition that happens in between that time, right? You're kind of mourning the loss of that childhood in a lot of ways. Because, you know, in the United States, you always look at 18, you're now an adult, right? But as you and I know, like in your adolescence, your brain is continuing to grow and develop for mm-hmm. many years after that, right? So, absolutely. You know, your adolescence doesn't really end until kind of your mid-20s usually. So, but we're saying to these young people, these teenagers that, okay, go be an adult now. Mm-hmm. That's yeah, a big and harsh transition.
And especially if you don't have already a idea what you want to do after you finish college, which I find is a very, I don't know, it amazes me. A lot of kids, 17, 18 years old, have no idea what they want to do, which I understand because there's so many options. But if they do have an idea, it makes whatever that is so much easier to be successful in. But if they graduate high school, all right, and they have no mission for their life, they're just going to wander, right? They're just going to just be out there. And most of the time, they're going to be at home. And I hate to say this, but they're probably going to be playing video games and, you know, just doing whatever, you know, to keep their lives from being so boring or, you know, discontent. And so anyway. So I'm with you on that. I think it's a very difficult transition at age, right around that age. And so,
It is. It's difficult and it's hard. And, you know, whether or not you're thrust into the college after that, you know, it's, you know, you can be aimless. I know when I was 18, I was like, yep, I'm going to go to medical school. I'm going to become a doctor. I'm going to major in, you know, my specialty is going to be neonatology. Like I had it all figured out. None of that panned out. I went a whole other direction. I was very happy with that shift and all those, you know, the steps that got me to where I ended up going. But I was so sure that that is exactly what I wanted out of life, you know, and looking back on it, it, you know, I've talked about this on the podcast too, but it was really driven by, okay, you know, in life, you have to work at something and you have to do something that makes you money. And it's not really about what, you know, brings you joy. You just have to, you know, and that comes from that mindset of like, you know, not growing up with a lot of money. And, you know, that influences our ideas on money, influences like our ideas on what we need to do in life. So it was coming from the space of lack and not this place of genuine passion and enjoyment and what I wanted to do in life. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, that's the critique of really putting a lot of this pressure on these very young people, because again, their brains are still developing, right? That adolescent brain, it's still geared towards, you know, pleasure. It's still geared towards doing things that feel good in this moment. And it's not always geared towards longevity.
Right. Right. And let me share with you, if I could, one of the things I did, which was really helpful. I was that, you know, when I went through my bachelor's program, my college first few years, I worked at places that I thought I would like to do after I finished college. And one, I was very interested in medical school. And so guess what I did? I went and worked at the medical library and did that for like a year or so. And just to see if it's something that I would want to do. And I did. I lost interest. I didn't feel it. I didn't feel that it was a place for me. So I said, oh, maybe I'd go to law school when I'm done. And guess what I did? I went and worked at the law library for a year or so. And it gave me a good sense of, you know, if this is what I want to do, this is what it's going to look like, you know, once I'm done and our enter into those programs. And so it was really helpful. It helped me to really determine what was it I really wanted to do in life. And so instead of just committing, to those programs prematurely, I, decided to be exposed to those disciplines. And so anyway, I love the idea of what you just said. I think it's a bit of a challenge, obviously. Kids are trying to figure out what to do with their life. And if it's college, how do you want to go about it? You know, and too often we know that, kids go to college because the parents are making them go, right? They're going because, you know, society tells them you need to go to college, and they're going resentfully. They're not really going because they really want to be there. They're going because, you know, everybody else is telling them you need to go to college. You know, the school counselors, right? Everybody's suggesting it. You may, most students, I believe, go because they're pressured to do so, not because they really want to. For kids of color and those kids that have those big challenges, college is not the first place choice of surviving, right? So
yes, and you know, as we know, you know, college, it can open up a lot of doors and opportunities, right? I wouldn't necessarily say that it's a necessity that everyone has to go to colleges. There's plenty of jobs and plenty of careers and things that, you know, pay very well and don't necessarily need that college degree. But there is something about the connections that you make in college, whether that's community college, whether you go to four-year university, whether you go, you know, to, you know, I went to like a kind of a smaller college as well, and then you can go to a big university. So, you know, there's something to be said about those connections that you make within college, especially during that younger period of time where you're 18, 19, you know, 20 years old. And, you know, whether you have an idea about what you want to do or you have no idea what you want to do, there's some really beautiful connections that can be made during that time, whether that's with professors, that's with peers, that's with counselors. There's a lot of resources that are afforded right during that time. So, you know, I think there's a lot of benefit to it. It does take a little bit of time to really decipher whether it makes sense, because it is a big, costly decision, right? That people need to make. So it's hard that these connections are kind of gatekept behind so much money, right? In order to access, you know, the people who have, you know, professors that have these Ivy League degrees and be able to access those conversations and access those counselors and some of those resources, you have to pay so much money. So that's a whole other social justice issue. Sure. I can go on my soapbox about that.
But I would say to that, for kids of, you know, minority kids and kids of, you know, low income, there's a lot of funding available where you can get through a 4-year college degree with paying very little amount of money. If you don't live in a dormitory, have to get the ticket bill. But it's very affordable. I'll give you an example. My son, he works for a company, UPS, and he didn't have to pay one penny for tuition because the company he worked for, UPS, they paid for everything. His dorm, his meals, his tuition, he had to pay nothing. And so it's a lot of programs out there like that. Mm-hmm. Of course, he had to sell his soul to UPS. Because what they did, they made them work after classroom hours, like 1 a.m. in the morning to 5 a.m. And so it was quite difficult. And but they paid for everything. He didn't have to worry about 1 cent of an expense. And so anyway.
Yes.
But and there's scholarships and there's financial aid, obviously, FAFSA and all that good stuff that really helps kids, particularly low-income kids that need that support. And so, so yeah, it can be expensive if you know, especially private schools, you know, private universities, private colleges, it can be pretty expensive. So
yes, it's important to look at those options. And a lot of people, especially if you're a first-generation college student, right? It's like, now that I've been through college, I kind of understand a little bit more now, and I'm like, okay, so if I could do it again, I would do so many things different in terms of finding funding, exactly what you mentioned. Like, there's money out there. You just kind of have to find it, whether that's scholarships or grants, you know, programs that you can be a part of. There's money and things out there that as a first generation, you know, low income student, you don't know. Right. And if you don't have those connections. And so I think that kind of segues into a little bit on, you know, your organization that you've built up, you know, Prepared by 18. You know, can you tell us a little bit about that and you know, the start of that and like what you do within that?
Yeah. So it's all in the sentence there, that phrase, Prepared by 18. Mm-hmm. So the goal is to kind of get them ready for when they turn 18 and they're launching off to whether they're going into college, military, or some vocational field. And and if they do college, that's my expertise, or, you know, that's where I hone in on. I really like it. They're going to need to take the ACT, SAT. Filling out the FAFSA, which is a whole big, you know, that's a whole dynamics in itself, you know. And just getting the college experience where they can go to visit these campuses, and see if it's a place that they could live for the next 4 years of their life. And so, you know, these college campuses have, these, tours for, incoming students all the time. And so I take advantage of that. Hey, you know, I got 4 or 5 students with me. Let's go. We're going to USC and check out the campus. And just see if it's something you can integrate into and something you like. And if not, well, let's go to Arizona State University and see if that campus fits you well. And so that's what that whole program is about. And in addition to that is I help prepare them for all the other things, aspects of life, you know, growing up as a young adult and how you're going to feed yourself, staying away from drugs and things that are going to harm you, and just being smart about how you live your adult life, your adulting, right? How you get through that early phase of your 18, 19, 20-year-old life. And so anyway, so that's what that whole thing is about. It's all about just preparing them for that next stage in their life. And what I found is that oftentimes those kids aren't ready. And so they do stay at home or and they do nothing because they're just not prepared for that next stage. And so, and if they only knew, and that's my goal, is to help them to see, hey, you got so many options available. Okay, you don't want to go to college. Yeah. Let's get you ready for the ASVAB, the military exam, so you can have that as an option. And if you want to go into the military, boom, you could go, you know. Or do you like plumbing? Do you like electricity? Do you like, you know, doing all these other fun stuff that you could do that, you know, make money without having to go to a four-year college? And so anyway, that's what that whole Prepare by 18 is all about. It's just getting them prepared. So
I love that. I love that it focuses on, you know, those, that kind of those older high school students. And again, that's a really hard, it's a hard time, you know, just emotionally, socially, there's a lot of transitions, you know, especially if I know when I was going to college and I moved around so much. Like, I think I went to like 8 different schools by the time I got to, you know, my sophomore or junior year. high schools, that is. I went to so many other schools before that. But, you know, I just moved a lot. It was just lots and lots and lots of moving. And so my transcript looked a whole hot mess. Right? And it just, because I would move and then, you know, like I took Latin at one school and then I would move to another school. They wouldn't have Latin. So I was in Spanish too. And, you know, like my math was all over the place. It just was everywhere. Like my grades were good, but it just, my transcript looked a whole hot mess. Sure. And so when it came to applying for schools, I wasn't really getting into any of the schools that I had applied. I didn't get into any school that I had applied to. Mm-hmm. And then seeing, you know, my other friends getting into schools, and there's just this really hard transitional moment when you're at that age. Things are changing. Things are shifting, mm-hmm. right? In terms of socially, your friends might be going to different places than where you're going. Mm-hmm. And that's really hard. You know, just the transition phase is just, it's really difficult. And transitioning is, as we talked about at the beginning of this episode, that, you know, even transitioning from one state to another state, even as an adult, it's hard, you know? And then you think of being in the midst of your adolescence, where you're still developing, you're still growing, and you add on all of this transition that's happening on top of that, it's a really hard time.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me add to that. Imagine that you were in ninth grade and you had this mentor coach from ninth grade all the way until you got into college, and they stuck with you until you finished college, right? Although you went through all those different schools, you had that one mentor that stuck with you and kept guiding you and mentoring you and say, hey, you know, we're going to get you through this high school. We're going to get you into college. We're going to get you finished with college. So that's what Prepare by 18 is. That's what that is. It finds those kids who are maybe in families that are, you know, there are a lot of challenges in the family. And so mom is doing everything she can to keep the roof over the head and food on the table, right? And all those different things that happens. But there's that mentor that stays with that kid, you know, year after year after year. And so that might answer your question that you asked earlier about what the future of education looks like. And so I might be jumping the gun here, but my thoughts is that mentor, you know, school counselors can't do it, right? Because they have 400 kids they have to work with, right? And they're just glad to get you graduated, right? Just get done with, get your degree, get your diploma. But, you know, a mentor, a coach who sticks with you through thick and thin helps you to get through that phase of those high school years and eventually into college and graduating. And so, anyway, that's my vision is to have those in place, you know, where those kids are being matched and they have that consistency and, you know, that long-term longevity with that one mentor coach that's helping them get through that phase in life. So.
And that's amazing, right? Because like we know, especially when it comes to, you know, students who are low income, students who are first generation, students who have other kind of socio-cultural things that are happening around them, having steady and consistent positive interactions with supportive adults, we know that that goes a long way. And we know and we understand that adolescence in itself, it starts from around, you know, time puberty happens, which is different, you know, for person to person, and goes until about like your mid-20s. And so we know that's a pretty big age range, right? And so, but having someone who is consistently a part of that adolescence and is consistently a part of your high school, and again, going from middle school to high school, usually that's between, you know, eighth and ninth grade. Sometimes it's a little bit different, but usually like between eighth and ninth grade is that jump from middle school to high school here in the States. And so, but having someone there for those, that really hard beginning transition of high school, because that is hard, that there's a lot of shift and changes that are happening there to all the way through high school. And then kind of that after high school portion too, where again, you're going through another major transition of after high school and whatever it is you do after high school, whether that's military, whether that's trade school, whether that's straight into a career, whether that's going to college, you know, someone is with you along that way and providing that guidance and support, right? And providing resources and things like that. That is definitely something that I wish I would have had, you know, growing up. And you're right. The counselors, they can only do so much, you know, your school counselors, just because they have every student at the school to focus on as well. And, you know, some students get really lucky and they make a great connection with the teacher or a guidance counselor or an admin at their school, and they're able to get that, you know, supportive adult that way. If you're not a first generation college student, you have parents that did go to college, right? They kind of know a little bit about how to navigate that. But it's really amazing to have just a supportive adult who does those things and helps supports you in that way, because it's a hard time for young people. And
they go, I have a 18-year-old senior. Mm-hmm. She's a very talented kid. She wants to go to college. So I asked her, said, so have you taken the ACT or SAT or anything like that? Of course, she didn't. Have you filled out any of your applications for the schools you want to go to? Of course, she didn't. So, and, you know, and so I end up talking to her mom. I said, hey, you want your daughter to go to college, right? She's really interested. She said, I'm not really sure if she said, I don't really care if she does or not, does not. You know, it's kind of very, very just nonchalant response. Mm-hmm. And that tells me, you know, that there it is. You know, that's that. Here's a kid that really is excited about going to college. And she wants to go to HBCU, which is pretty cool. But she has no guidance, no counselors. I asked her, has your counselors talked to you about getting ready for college? Nope. Anyway. I'm going to do all I can to get this young lady into college, and particularly HBCU. She wants to go out in Louisiana, and I'm going to do everything I can to help her get there. But I see how far behind the ball she is, right? She's really got a lot of catching up to do. Here we are in spring. She graduates in May. No college applications, anything like that. Anyway, so we got a lot of work to do, but I'm going to get her there. I'm going to do everything.
It is a lot of steps. It is a lot of steps. You have to apply by, like, what is it, fall or winter, so you can get in the fall the next year, and you have to have all your test scores. I think some schools might be doing away with some SATs.
They are.
And ACTs, you know, I think is pretty good. But, you know, some schools still require it. So it's just one of those things, like, I think in this transitional phase, as some schools are doing away with it, it's still kind of good just to have, just in case a college that you want to apply to requires it. But even then, like, there's a lot of things that you that the SAT asks of you that you might not have even learned in school. So preparing for that and having the support to know, you know, where to look for things or what, how to prepare for it, right? Because I didn't know that I needed to prepare for the SAT. I knew I needed to take it. I was like, oh, people say you have to take it. So I just kind of took it, and I scored, you know, pretty decent. I mean, it wasn't like a phenomenal score, but it was, I didn't really prepare for it. So.
Sure.
You know.
And those schools you're mentioning, they're called test optional. You know, you can take the test, but if they don't require it, they will use it if you need it. If you're, like, your GPA is really low, they'll use your ACT as a asset to help your enrollment. And so anyway, although I know California's gotten rid of the ACT requirement, but I tell students still take it, you know, because it's a third leg you can use. If your GPA is not very high when you're coming out of high school, still use it. And it might help your entrance, your application. Mm. So, yeah.
Yes. I love it. And so kind of speaking on that education, how do you see the intersection of education and social justice in the context of preparing students for either higher education or just their future?
Yeah. So this is a really passionate topic for me, because when you look at the statistics, they really speak to how kids of color, low-income kids, they are at the bottom when it comes to education achievement. We do know that, you know, in the early ages of their education, first through third grade, those students, mm-hmm. particularly of color, they tend to do really well, right? But as they go into those advanced grade levels, their success drops tremendously. And so, and why is that? I mean, obviously, there's a whole lot of factors that comes with that and why that happens. And I'm mostly interested in not so much those elementary age grades, but those kids that once they get to their 12th, their senior year in high school, what happens now or how do they, how successful were they? What's the GPA look like? What sort of options do they have because they've learned efficient amount of information, knowledge and stuff going through those formal grades? And so I think there's a huge injustice. I think that I post on my website, it's the title of it is Why White Students Are 250% More Likely to Graduate College Than Black Students. And so that and it says a lot, says it all. It is a huge gap between those kids that graduate from high school or go to college and graduate. Huge gap. And so, and anyway, I'm trying to just do my part in helping those students individually prepare themselves, get through high school successfully, and then have these other options available, whether it's college or military or, you know, vocational school. But it's something that really, and that's maybe something that really sparked my passion about this whole thing is when I saw these huge gaps. Just an example, you look at the ACT scores of kids and how they compare based off of race. It's like, oh my goodness, did some of these kids not go to school, go to class? What happened? You know, that gap just gets bigger and bigger. I think there's a lot to be done, Brittany. I think there's a lot that needs to be done in helping to close that gap. Otherwise, it's going to continue to get bigger. And, you know, one of the things I like about California is I noticed the education commissioner, he's aware of these gaps. And he's doing his part. We're creating policies to help those kids catch up and graduate at a higher rate, which is pretty cool. You don't see that in a lot of other states when they see these gaps, they're not going to be proactive about it. Just, it is what it is, and leave it at that. But the Commission for California Education is very proactive.
Yes, he is. I've seen him talk at a couple of conferences, and I may not agree with everything he says and does, but I do agree that he is really a really strong proponent, especially for students of color, given his background. And he has, made a lot of really great suggestions, and he's done a lot of really beautiful things. So I agree. I really like the work that he's been doing, especially with, California students, and really, shining a light on this issue that, not all states are really paying attention to, right? And it's one of those things where you can see that data, because I think there was another study that I was looking at a couple years ago that mentioned similar around, what was it, like second or third grade, right? Students of color scored really high. They were doing really well up until about third grade. And we kind of see this dip for students anyways, because that's when standardized testing starts in third grade, and then a lot of things are happening in the third grade. Some kids are starting puberty in the so it's a lot of things are kind of just happening around this time of their lives. So it makes sense. But there was that one study that looked at third graders, like when they came in and was asking about their thoughts about school, their thoughts about themselves, and like they had pretty high esteem, they had pretty high like kind of measures of intelligence and everything. And then they measured them again at the end of the fourth grade, and it plummeted. Like, it was drastic to see how low these students were scoring, and especially pairing that to see how low their self-esteem was, right? And that is what's heartbreaking, right? Because we can look at that data and just come to the conclusion of, oh, okay, well, students of color just aren't intelligent, or students of color just don't try as hard. And that's not the information that we want to be gathering from this data, right? The data is just giving us that information. And then we can look a little bit deeper at this the historical issues, the systemic issues in our country, the systemic issues in our educational system, and how these things impact the students on both their education, but also their self-esteem, their emotional skills, their social skills, all of these things. So it's really disheartening to see that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And so then it makes sense then, as you keep progressing through the ages and the stages and the grades, as you keep progressing, it makes sense that you're going to see the divide between white students and students of color getting greater and greater and greater. Mm-hmm. And, you know, without having that direct influence and without having that direct, you know, let's interrupt these cycles that are happening with young students, right?
Yeah.
As you said, you know, we're just going to see the divide getting, you know, even worse for students and, you know, letting students fall through the cracks, which is something that I'm also very passionate about. Yeah. I've talked about it here on this podcast before, but that school to prison pipeline, it starts as early as preschool. But what it's really related to is those systemic practices, those historical and systemic practices in schools. What are our views as educators about our students? What are our views as a greater society about our students? And it would be remiss of us to not acknowledge that that's obviously going to have an impact on those students, right?
Absolutely.
And their long-term measures of, you know, success and achievement and all of those things. But most importantly, how it impacts their view of themselves and their own abilities.
Absolutely.
And what they're capable of, right?
Mm-hmm. I would bet this would be a great research project to see, you know, that third grade factor. You know, is it is it that kids of color have a greater dip, or is it every grade, every race has a dip, but the kids of color have a much distinctive, a significant dip in the loss of their, you know, growth and education attainment. And so that's a good question. I might have to do some research on that and see how it factors out when it comes to a variety of other different races. So
yeah, absolutely. Please do let me know. Include me on that research. I want to know. Just because I know third grade, it's a really, really big pivotal year for education, for educators, for students. Like I mentioned, some, you know, girls could start puberty as early as around like 8 or 9. It's pretty early, but they can. And so that's like around third grade. And so that's one big shift that's happening. And then usually in the US, we start standardized testing in the third grade, second or third grade, but usually about third grade, we start standardized testing. And so it shifts the approach that we have as educators into the classroom. And there's obviously a big shift between, you know, me as an early childhood educator, you know, focusing primarily on preschool age, pre-kindergarten. There's a huge major shift between that and our K-12 system. Again, it's just a big shift in how we're approaching
education.
You're
onto something here. Wow. That might be a good article. Have you done any blogs on that that age group?
On the early childhood?
Well, at that third grade, because I'm really fascinated because I've heard this so many times that, you know, that dip that happens, you know.
Yes.
So anyway, I don't know if you've done. I know you like to. You do blogs, right?
I do. I have a newsletter on my LinkedIn. So if you're interested, Conscious Pathways newsletter. I'm looking to start updating it again this year. I took a little break because I started the podcast and the newsletter at the same time. So now that I have a good podcasting footing, I'm hoping to get back into writing a little bit more on my newsletter. Yeah, it's a really fascinating time. I think third grade it's a lot. And I think there's a lot of research that can be done in terms of psychologically what's happening and then systematically what's happening. But I remember being just really astounded by that, you know, bit of research that kind of said, again, by that beginning of third grade, these kids had pretty high self-esteem. By the end of third grade, their self-esteem plummeted. It was pretty low. And so you have that in conjunction with, you know, their kind of academic skills and everything like that. It's a big pivotal age, and I did a podcast on reading before, and we kind of also said by third grade, if students aren't reading in the United States or they're not, you know, at grade level reading by third grade, then it's going to get harder and harder for them to catch up at that point, and kind of made this point about whether it's developmentally appropriate how we're teaching them to read and how early we're teaching them to read. And there's all these different things that kind of fit into that. But these are all aspects of social justice when you really think about it, because how are we treating these students and how are we, you know, seeing their humanity and seeing their dignity and, you know, informing their futures, right? So there's just so many things.
I like what you said, and I think you're onto something when you said the, you know, that grade level, those teachers switch up their teaching because they are introducing now standardized, they're preparing for standardized testing, right? You know, because you want to look good. You want to make sure your kids are scoring high, right? Your principal's determining whether or not your evaluation is based off of how successful your kids are, and the parents are more very much into, well, my kid didn't score high on the, those standardized tests or whatever, you know. But I think the other part to that is if we can figure out those factors, then we start to implement things to prevent that curve from happening. You know, interventions that might be very useful, particularly for third grade teachers or classrooms, that really starts to counter those factors that those kids are experiencing that makes their success or their classroom learning diminished. So anyway, I love that. I think it's I think you're onto something there.
Thank you. I'll keep getting on my pedestal about it, because I think it's important, and early childhood is really important. I think it lays the groundwork for their future kind of education, and you know, the way that we interact with students and the way that we can build up and foster that love for learning, they could take that with them throughout the rest of their stages of life. And again, whether that love of learning continues into university and college, whether that love of learning, you know, transitions into other things in other ways, maybe they want to start their own business or nonprofit, right? There's that love of learning will help guide them and take them in a direction and build that resilience and build up that persistence, right? And we can do that in early childhood in a way that, again, is affirming and, you know, sees their humanity and their dignity and builds up these students, especially our students of color, our underrepresented students as well. And it's important, and it's something that I passionately care about.
Absolutely. That's the groundwork, right? For the rest of their life, right? That age group. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know that sets the groundwork. And I would bet, I haven't done any studies on it, but I would bet the level of success at those grade levels will determine most likely their level of success in the middle school and high school levels. So if kids are really struggling in elementary school, you're going to probably see it in middle school as well as high school and college, likely, unless there's some really good, strong interventions, kids end up going, you know, being educated in a much more stronger environment where their learning is really heightened so that they can be more successful. So anyway.
Yes, absolutely. And on that topic, just as we're thinking about success for students, and I think we really need to reevaluate what our ideas of success are and what that means, right? Because, you know, my perspective in early childhood, especially with my students, you know, I'd ask the parents as they're coming into my program, like, what are your goals and ambitions for your child as they're going throughout this program? Like, what do you want to see from them? And one, that gives me a lot of data on what's important to the family and the parents. And it also kind of gives me an idea of where their expectations are. So if your expectations are, you know, all the way on planet, you know, Jupiter, right? And it's like, okay, we gotta get some reasonable expectations for the age range of the developmental stage of the student that we have right now, right? you know, we could work towards some of these goals, but I'm not, you know, going to expect them to be able to write their name at the end of, you know, my class. And that's, you know, by three, you know, some kids can, most kids aren't going to be able to do that. Right.
But don't discourage, you know, those really big dreamers, mm-hmm. you know, even though you yes. see that they're not really yes. prepared, you know, yes. but they have this big dream. I want to be a, you know, astronaut, you know,
yeah.
allow them to keep dreaming mm-hmm. like that, you know.
Exactly. Allow them to keep dreaming.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, when I look at success within early childhood, I'm looking less so on these academic markers, but I'm looking more so on social emotional skills, self-expression, self-identity. I'm looking more at those skills. And to me, success at a successful completion of, you know, preschool to me looks like, you know, you have a good idea on who you are. You have a good idea about other people. You are curious about other people. You have a good idea about emotions. So that to me defines success at the end of preschool. And to me, what's going to define success for the rest of early childhood and elementary, you know, I think just as educators, we can redefine what that looks like mm-hmm. and also incorporating those students on what success is going to look like for them, because they also mm-hmm. deserve to have a say in their educational path. And that starts mm-hmm. in early childhood, right? We build up those foundations and frameworks. So as you said, once they get into high school and now they're starting to think about what they want to do with their future, if by the time you enter into, you know, your ninth grade and you already know what your skills are, you know, I'm really good at these things. I really love these things. I really enjoy this. This is where my talents and skills are, right? If they know that, it's going to be such a better transition rather mm-hmm. than if they're Absolutely. In the ninth grade and their self-esteem is on the floor. They don't think they're good at anything. They don't think they're mm-hmm. good enough for anything. That it makes sense that you don't have ambitions mm-hmm. because yep. You haven't been built up to do that. So it starts early, just on my pedestal. You know
what you're describing is how difficult it is to be a school teacher. That's a lot of their responsibility, right? Is to mm-hmm. put all those aspects, those assets together, beginning from mm-hmm. pre-K all the way up. And I have the ultimate respect for school teachers, because what you just described is how difficult their job is, because they have mm-hmm. to, they have to teach the academic stuff, right? Mm-hmm. They have to manage the classroom. You got 25, 30 kids in your classroom. And then you have to try to incorporate those emotional, all those soft skills, right? And that is mm-hmm. a tough job. And yes. so, you know, I respect my teachers, those teachers mm-hmm. that go in the classroom day in and day out. And so mm-hmm. I have this, he's a middle school teacher that I work with, and he is phenomenal. He's a phenomenal instructor, but he has a rough and tumble classroom. You know, his kids are, you know, they're up. Where is he at? He's in San Diego. I think he's in San Diego. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he says how hard it is to teach the subject and manage the classroom at the same time with 30 mm-hmm. kids. And so, you know, my goal is to try to just keep them in the fight. I'm just like, just mm-hmm. constantly say, don't quit the fight. If nothing else, think about you come May, June, you got a 2-month vacation. so stay in the fight. But you're making a difference, believe me. And, you know, continue to use your talent. He's very talented, mm-hmm. instructor, teacher. And so, but he reminds me how difficult, tough the job is, and how much it takes to really put all those pieces together for those multiple minds that are in his classroom. And so, mm-hmm. and that's just one classroom, right? He's got five more to do by the yeah. end of the day. So mm-hmm. they have a tough job. They do. They're my heroes. They are. So
My heart goes out to all the middle school teachers out there, because I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it.
Yeah.
I know. People look at me like, I don't know how you teach preschool. And I'm like, I don't know how you teach middle school, to be honest with you. I am way too sensitive. I'm a big baby, and they will tear me apart. So,
I have a teacher, she tells me that she says middle school kids are the reason they're so rambunctious and all that stuff is because they're still high off of crayons. I don't know if you got that or not, but but the fact is they're still elementary kids, right? They're still developing. And even though they're in middle school, doesn't mean they haven't left third grade, you know, so mentally or emotionally. Yeah, so,
it's a tricky time. It's a hard time. They've got a lot going on, but they're fun. Yep. They're funny and they're a funny group of kids. And, but yeah, our middle school teachers, more power to y'all. Cause I don't know.
You better have a lot of caffeine, a lot of coffee.
So you kind of touched on this already, but how do you reimagine the future of education?
Yeah. And it goes with the idea of that intervention that there's more support for those kids as they particularly get into the higher level grade levels. And it's not just the teacher's responsibilities and the school counselors to help them progress through their grades. There's those outside interventions that are happening. I know some kids do tutoring, stuff like that, and that's for academic reasons, right? But it's not preparing them necessarily for all the other aspects they're going to face in life. So that intervention, that support system that's included with, those kids' education. One of the things, I came from Kentucky, and Kentucky did this really cool thing. What they did was they started putting mental health providers in all their schools, every one of them. So if a kid's going through something at home, the school counselor is not the necessary person to go to. It's that mental health provider. If that kid's going through some really social interactions, being bullied or whatever, it's the mental health provider. And it's awesome. And so every school in Jefferson County, in Kentucky, now has these in place, these mental health providers. And so that's a good start. That's a good start. And so that's how I re-envision the future of education is not just the academic part. It's all the holistic parts of that kid that are being addressed. So anyway, that's, it's probably a big ask. It's probably a huge thing to implement in all school districts, but there needs to be something like that to help those kids make successful transitions into adulthood.
Yes, yes, yes. All of that. And I love that's a lot of the reason why I ask that question is it's important for us to keep dreaming big, and it's important for us to keep thinking about how we can make this better for students and thinking about how can we support their kind of, like you said, their holistic development, but how can we support all of their development and all of that kind of holistic aspects of it? I want to thank you so much for joining me. Where can my audience find you if they're wanting to connect with you?
Prepared by 18.
Okay.
As exactly how it's spelled, PREPARED by 18. com.
Yes, and I'll put that in the show notes as well. So if you're curious and you want to look into what Dr. Thompson is working on, you can check out the website in those show notes. I want to give you a thank you, thank you, thank you so much for joining me today. This was an absolutely beautiful conversation, and this was great. Thank you.
Thanks, Brittany. I enjoyed it. Hope we can do it again.
Absolutely.
Get you out there making all kinds of changes in our education system.
That's the goal. That's what I'm trying to do.
Traveling across the country, giving big speeches about how we got to change.
Yes, so, yes, please. Please, if you want to contact me for your big speeches, go to consciouspathways.org. I'm just kidding.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Hi, Brittany. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into Conscious Pathways. Don't forget to like, share, and follow Conscious Pathways wherever you get your podcasts. And if you can, please leave a rating or review. It really does help the podcast to grow and find more listeners just like you. And until next time, don't forget to navigate your conscious journey with courage and kindness. And I'll see you there for more transformative conversations.